Atheists are America's least trusted group, according to a national survey conducted by university sociology researchers. Based on a telephone survey of more than 2,000 households and in-depth interviews with more than 140 people, researchers found that Americans rate atheists below Muslims, recent immigrants, homosexuals, and other groups as sharing their vision of American society. Americans are also least willing to let their children marry atheists. It tells us about how Americans view religion, said Penny Edgel, an associate sociology professor and the study's lead researcher. Many Americans seem to believe some kind of religious faith is central to being a good American and a good person. So it sounds to me like Americans would rather have their daughters marry homosexual men than atheists. And this is the Hellbound Alley program. This is Allie, and with me, as always, is the lovely and vivacious Francois.
Mm-hmm.
Bejeweled and decked out in a mermaid costume, because today, of course, is April Fool's Day, or as Frank would put it, Poisson d'Avril. Is that how you say it? Say it for me.
No.
Please?
Say it in French.
You're French.
Poisson d'Avril.
Poisson d'Avril. Is that right?
Just never mind.
Keep
going.
But anyway, so yeah, everyone has heard. People don't like atheists in America. You know, that's big news, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Oh, does it?
Because what they say on that survey, you know, can't be how people live their lives, because there's a lot of us running around and they don't even know it.
Well, exactly, if they didn't know it.
He's a what? So, you know, like I said, they'd rather have their daughters marry gay men than atheists, because that's what she asked.
Yeah.
Who are you least willing to let your daughter marry?
So you think that they're lying?
I think it's probably how they ask the question, you know?
Did they ask the question?
I mean, if you said, would you let your daughter marry a person who has a good moral compass and a strong sense of values, and who values humanity? They'd say, oh yes, absolutely, of course.
Yeah, but you can't be moral and an atheist, though.
Well, that's what they think, I suppose. But that doesn't mean that most Americans aren't stupid, either.
But that's what I just said.
Yeah. But I don't like to dwell on the idea that we're hated or whatever. I don't think it helps.
But it's a survey.
Yeah. I don't know how much this is going to inform my life, I guess. Like that I'm...
Well, it shows you that you just don't tell anyone that you're an atheist.
Well, you know, but I've had that experience enough times to know that. So, you know...
Stay in the closet.
I think it's important, as with the gay rights thing, that if more people come out, then people can't retreat into misinformation.
You know,
there's
a flip side to that study,
I mean,
too, because
if more people
atheists
come out, they realize that
the
gay people are not weird and immoral and going to
all of a sudden
molest their children.
The majority,
you know,
within a generation or two, then I'm sure that Christians would become,
you know,
the less trusted.
Just look at Tammy Faye Baker. She loves gay people now. She goes on their talk shows, you know. She's like their Dolly Parton, I think. Even though Dolly Parton sings about Jesus, they love Tammy Faye. And Tammy Faye loves them, even though they're probably going to hell or whatever.
Christians and Jews kind of have somewhat of an affinity with each other, you know, the way we send all the free bombs and guns over to Israel and stuff.
I'm sure that Christians would become the least trusted group in all of America. It would only make sense.
Well, I mean, there are probably a lot more atheists than there are Jews, And but of course, people always distrust homosexuals, atheists, and Jews. That's basically.
Christians and Jews kind of have somewhat of an affinity with each other, you know, when you send all the three guys and guns over to Israel.
But as far as who people distrust, you know, and who people blame for all the bad things in the world, it's generally gays, atheists, and Jews. But I don't know when that's going to change, except for the fact that more kids tend to live in mixed religion households, which creates atheists. So that's a good thing.
Hey, I don't know how long we're going to stay, just for a minute, but what's the topic?
We have guests, by the way.
Yes, we do, and I haven't introduced them. How terrible of me. Of course, you've been listening to our good friend Aaron Kinney. Hi, Aaron. And our friend Ed.
Andrew.
Ed.
Andrew. And our friend Andrew.
And our friend Andrew.
We're supposed to have Ed.
We have the Greaves with us. Okay, so we have Andrew Grieve with us then.
Yes.
Hey, Andrew. Well, it's a happy coincidence, interestingly enough, that it is April Fish Day, and we're talking about Jesus. I mean, we didn't plan it that way, but I kind of thought it was funny because I know before we get into it, Jesus Christ, the character, is sort of an April Fool or an April Fish, as you would have it. I mean, think about it. April is Easter, and Easter's when he got creamed, right? And he's a fish, like, you know, the Jesus fish. Yeah. April Fools. He comes out of the cave.
Before we get on the subject of Jesus, though.
Yes.
I wanted to mention something about the Afghan that is on trial right now. Well, I get the trial's over.
There's a throw blanket on trial for Christianity?
You're funny. No.
They put an Afghan on trial. I mean, that's all I think.
For converting from Islam to Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember correctly, the trial's over. But there was a lot of talk about that, and one thing that I retained from that was Christians are very
Christians
fast
are so horrible
in talking about freedom of religion when it's a Christian on trial. But when it happens in the U.S., you have the freedom of religion, but you shouldn't offend Christians. They're very fast to deny them when it's in the U.S., but when it's a Christian on trial, the compassion pours. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, I know, because the 85% majority is just being pummeled by the rest of the 15%.
We are powerful. We're really powerful as atheists if we can do that, and secularists. I mean, in a sense, I do understand what they're saying, because the media is overwhelmingly secular. I mean, secularism has really taken over. What?
Democracy, shramocracy.
Yes, that's true. And
I would have to say...
And, of course, secularism is pro-democracy and pro-tolerance, which I don't think is a good thing.
I would have to say, though, that secular values in the media is not new, and if you ever listen to radio and television from several decades ago, it's not that Christian. I mean, every once in a while, they come up with their own little films and radio spots. Like, you know, you'd hear it in church and in school, but for the most part, you know, the 50s was more pro-science than it is now, so
true.
I don't think it's that new. Exactly.
True.
We need competition to really excel. I think
Well, you have to remember that back then they didn't have satellite television. They didn't have the opportunity for more different religious groups to come out and be crazy all the time. Of course, the 50s are big on Christianity. We know that because we're fighting the Russians. You know, that's when we get our under God thing. But still, it's not. I don't think it's more secular that much. Although, I suppose atheism itself probably was a lot more popular, say, in the 1800s than it is now.
I mean, it is a culture war that we're engaged in, but especially in the U.S.
Even the Bush handlers.
Which is, Andrew's right. You know, there are some commentators that come from the religious side. But... Yeah, but they are struggling in a media that is mostly liberal and that is mostly secular. And I think what you have right now is a struggle between liberalism and modern values and tolerance versus right-wing religious intolerance.
Yeah.
And...
Yeah.
and of course I'm not saying that I'm for one side or another necessarily, because I don't like either side, but given a choice, you know, we have to ally with modern values, because that's, you know, we don't, if we really have to take a stand between, you know, modernity and Christianity, it's not really a choice, you know. It's kind of a crappy choice to begin with, but, you know.
Sorry.
Someone else has something to say?
The idea that sort of it's acceptable to hold whatever political beliefs you want, sort of? Sort of like,
political beliefs.
Yeah.
Not acceptable to be a Satanist either.
Yeah.
Do you mind speaking a little louder, Andrew?
Sorry.
I can't. Yeah, thanks.
I guess the idea is acceptable to hold whatever group you want. Sort of like.
Not really. It's not acceptable to be a neo-Nazi.
Yeah.
But the general idea is you have to be tolerant.
Ideas equal, you know, amount of.
The general nobody wants to be seen as being intolerant.
The general idea is that all beliefs are equal, and the democratic system is the best way to resolve them.
Stratify the good ones and differentiate.
Right.
Which both premises are, of course, complete nonsense, but that's the basic idea of it, is that you shouldn't insult anyone, and you should consider all ideas on an equal footing, and et cetera. Exactly. Exactly. Because from their standpoint, science is just another
belief system. An ideology.
Which, of course, is kind of better than the religious idea, which is that science is the spawn of Satan. But once again, they're both crappy. But
or that science and Islam is the same.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and give our coordinates?
Sure. Well, you can look at our shows and other downloads at hellboundalley.com, and you can send us an email at allie@hellboundalley.com. That's A-double-L-triple-E. You know, it's kind of interesting. Also, I have a blog at Allie at at hellboundallie.blogspot.com, and I experienced a
you know, PZ
fantastic spike last week.
Ferengula, the number one 3,000
hits
in
one day, and I hope some of the people that
one of the things that,
that came along managed to find us. I mean, out of 3,000 hits, you would think that somebody would manage to come and listen to this show from that. So apparently, that was caused by the whole civil discussion thing. So that's really cool.
I love that thing so much.
It's been making the rounds and it's on people's SIGs now. But
you know,
yeah. Who? Right, that might have helped. I also got listed. Yeah, but yeah, that was pretty interesting. Too bad I didn't.
Yeah, there's
come
even a lot of atheists that say, "Oh, Jesus
happened,
was a good
so
guy.
Lost
he just wasn't the son of God."
On my sight meter, I have no real idea.
Our topic today is Jesus' morality, and I thought we should go through because. There's this idea, belief, which is pretty widespread, and Jesus' morality is the good thing about Christianity, and that if there's anything to take away from Christianity is Jesus, how wonderful Jesus' teachings are.
Yeah, there's even a lot of atheists that say, oh, Jesus was a good guy. He just wasn't the son of God.
Absolutely, and you can find that in South Park, even. I mean, they're like, well, basically, they're... Mormonism wants to teach you to be nice and kind to everyone, and it's always that. Nobody seems to want to question
Jesus'
morality.
Now, I have a challenge to everyone who believes that, please, to take into consideration my challenge. I would like anyone to show me
I would like to
one,
see a lot of people try, and I'd like to see a lot
Jesus
of emails that sent and see what
context,
they have to offer.
That is morally valid, justified. Please, I would like to see. I would like you to email us at
Allie. I already know what they're gonna say.
At Allie at hellboundallie.com. Give us your justification. Tell us what it is, and I'll talk about it on the show. But there is no such verse. So, but I want to defy if that's really what you think.
I would like to see a lot of people try, and I'd like to see a lot of emails get sent to see what they have to offer.
That would be nice.
Because the Gospels have nothing to offer to any reasonable person. But I can't really prove that in 1 hour, because the Gospels are pretty long.
Of course, I mean, you could take any verse, you don't really know what it means, plus he
I said
contradicts
in context.
Himself. Yeah.
I said in context.
Because, I mean, if Jesus is going to say that you should take 100% of yourself and your heart and love God, and at the same time say,
I don't think that's good.
Say love your neighbor as yourself, how does that work? I mean, obviously, we have argument with love thy neighbor as thyself, and we don't really know what it means. But if you put, if you love God with 100% of your being, how can you also love yourself and love your neighbor? And where does Jesus say you should love yourself?
True, but I don't think it's morally justifiable to just love indiscriminately.
No,
love is a recognition of value. Mm-hmm. You can't just love your neighbor as yourself. That's ridiculous.
Well, okay,
no one does that.
This is my question.
It's ridiculous.
Who is a neighbor? And is that going to be clear in the Bible who your neighbor is?
I think neighbor means your fellow Christians, but I'm not.
Yeah.
I don't remember the verse, so I'm not gonna say that I know this because
but
I don't remember.
I already know what they're going to say because I know Christianese. Loving your neighbor. You do that through loving God. See, I mean, it works.
Yeah, whatever. But it's not justifiable.
No.
So. Another thing that I've noticed while going through the Gospels, skimming through the Gospels, is that it's so fucking boring. Basically, all it is a bunch of self-glorifying parables. Oh, look, I'm the shepherd, you're the sheep.
I'm the tree, you're the fruit.
You're lost, and I have to get you back. And the other half...
I'm the king and I'm throwing you out of my
wedding. Exactly. The other part, the other half is, if you don't do what I want, you're going to burn. I'm the judge. I'm the only judge. You can't judge, but I can judge you. And okay. I'm the king, and if you're my enemy, I'm going to kill you. Blah, blah, blah. So it's so boring. Now, what is Jesus? If you look at this objectively, what is this character? Because he didn't exist. We're talking about a fictional character. So what is this character's attributes?
Don't forget the
Well, I think a lot of the Gospels is he's some kind of garish magician performing tricks and faith healings like one of those guys on TV, you know, heal! Heal in the name of Jesus! But of course he didn't say that. Because he is Jesus. But, you know, the faith healings, curing demonic possession, laying hands on illness, even resurrections. But, I mean... What? Yes, but I like to read about cults and things of that nature.
I saw something
and
on television. It was a,
I like to read about Sai Baba,
where
who's
there
a
were some
big time, the biggest guru in India right now.
And they went
there are stories of Sai Baba resurrecting
to disprove
people from
yeah.
the dead.
So,
this, you know, once again, there's no difference between this
sort of
and
how
the garish
work and, you know,
magician or
and when
fake
Sai Baba
guru.
Dies,
you know, just a trick. It's
oh,
like
I'm
Sai
sure
Baba
they're
going
to have a lot
like
of
that.
Stories about it. I mean, yeah. They have stories of Sai Baba saving people from airplane crashes. I mean, seeing him in
because,
the
you know,
air, you know, whatever.
In India, I think just the other week I was reading on BBC or something that there was a family was chased out of the village or their house was burned or they were, I can't remember exactly, but
yeah.
Horrible things happen in India because of this stuff still. I think it's amazing to have a world where people are sitting around on Skype talking about these things that are actually happening out there.
Yeah,
there's a great show.
Yeah,
it's like a big skeptic organization in India, and I think it was on the BBC.
Yeah.
Did Mary know?
Yeah. So, Jesus is also a frustrated cult leader. And the most obvious fact that you can look to is that his family doesn't believe him. Which is an obvious mark of a cult leader. If he really was a messiah... his family should be the first people to have seen his holiness. But if he was just a normal Joe, you know, what happens is cult leaders don't like to have their families in the limelight because their families know who they are. They're just normal Joes who started pretending one day that they saw aliens or, you know, whatever. So I think it's interesting that even in this fantasy story, it's obvious that this character is just...
You guys, I was
well,
curious, have any insight?
It's just an ordinary Joe.
Any mother whose child has become a guru and a cult leader can
exactly.
see her benefits from this. But, of course, Jesus wanted to grandstand and show everybody that he cared about his followers more than her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do with you, woman?
Yeah, exactly. And
you
we're
know,
going to talk about that.
Not letting the family members
maybe
in to see him because he has more important things to do.
To
it's like, oh, look at how fair I am. It already is. We haven't seen it or read the book. Although my mother, who is like a sort of agnostic Christian... is trying to get me to read it and sending me books by Dan Brown, so I don't know. I'm sure she can't wait for the movie to come out. Well, I read a letter to Normal Bob Smith in his hate mail section where this 13-year-old girl from England says, Didn't you read the Da Vinci Code? It proves that Jesus lived and married Mary Magdalene and had a child.
Okay, you guys, we only have a few minutes until the intermission.
Sorry.
I just want to finish this so we can start talking about the verses when we come back.
So.
Yes, what I was just going to talk about is the apocalyptic context of Jesus' teachings. And I only have 4 minutes, so please, let's concentrate for a minute on the context, which I think, if you understand it, Jesus was an apocalypticist. Everything in that Jesus says really falls into place. A big part of Jesus' teachings is the abandonment of material goods, materialism, which of course no one understands or cares about, but it's a big theme in his teachings. Why is it a big theme in his teachings?
Yeah, why do monks take vows of poverty?
Exactly, but why is it a big theme in his teachings? Why does Jesus even tells you that Jesus
Imagine
even tells you that you should abandon your family and abandon all that you own.
There was a whole bunch of years serve
him
closely, spaced together.
Because he thought the apocalypse was coming.
Entire
he thought the end was
new,
coming.
You know,
that's why he said that. That's why he was saying these things.
Yeah, for example.
Or the gospel writers thought that.
But especially Christians
before,
were very much caught
well,
up in
they,
it too, you know?
I don't know
and
what
like
they
the
thought,
9,
because it was all written after.
All of Europe was
so
jam-packed into churches, praying
write.
Their asses off, hoping that the devil wasn't going to come out and swallow them all up in the fires. Is it hit 1,000?
Different years, and very closely, you know, spaced together, where people were predicting the end of the world factor, and entire societies.
Yeah, the Christians don't have a monopoly on that, definitely.
Not even the Christians, but especially the Christians were very much caught up in it too, you know, and like on the year 999, all of Europe was jam-packed into churches, praying their asses off, hoping that the devil was going to come out and swallow them all up.
Yeah, it wasn't the hugest thing, but yeah, at the time, there are many different Jewish sects that had their apocalypse coming, and
even Paul, who didn't know about the whole Jesus myth, thought that the end was coming, and that's why he said you shouldn't marry. There's no point in marrying; the end is coming. what's the you know?
Yeah, of course, and this is not simply based on the Gospel of John the Elder. We're talking about more like Daniel, the book of Daniel, which is the
earlier
apocalypse that Jesus supposedly is referring to.
Yeah. So I think if you understand that, a lot of the things go into perspective. For example, when he says give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and you shouldn't care about, even though you shouldn't be, you shouldn't want to pay for getting in the temple or whatever. I don't remember exactly what it was. But he says, you know, give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and give to God what belongs to God. I think his attitude, when I was reading it, his attitude seemed very much like, you know, we don't have the time to bother with that anyway. It doesn't matter.
That's because
just go ahead and pay it. Pay the half draft that they want or
that's because
whatever.
Caesar and Rome was going to get their asses kicked.
Exactly.
Because they were the ones that were the bad guys, and we're going to get them back. That's what apocalypse stories are all about. It was all about Rome. It was all about Caesar. It was all about Nero or whoever it was.
Okay.
And we're not talking about Jesus. We're talking about a gospel writer who wanted to promote this particular line.
Yeah, but, you know, we're talking about a fictional character.
A fictional character.
Also, Jesus was a bum.
He didn't like money very much.
Jesus was a bum. He had no home. He had pretty much nothing.
Yeah, but he said it was easier
bummed
for
his meals
for a rich man to
out
pass
of
through the needle of, or no, for
widow,
a camel to
rich
pass
women,
the eye of
widow,
the rich
Greek
man to
women
get into heaven.
Who had houses,
if you're rich, you're screwed,
those were the first
so
churches.
Money. Exactly. In his eyes.
And he said that other people should be bums. That you should abandon your family and become a bum.
He didn't like money very much.
Did he like money?
Maybe because he didn't have any.
Yeah, but he said it was easier for a rich man to pass through the needle of, or no, for a camel to pass through
yeah.
the eye of the needle than a rich man to get into heaven.
Exactly.
If you're rich,
yeah, like
exactly.
Yeah.
And yeah, exactly. And
you know what's
and
funny?
I think
you know
that
what's funny
understand
is that
that
my a good friend of mine is an ambulance driver and spends a lot of time in Skid Row, which is like the homeless capital of
well,
Los
but
Angeles.
But of course,
so.
No one thinks that that's good, really.
There's a lot
they
of
may say
very
that they think
religious
good, but
and
no
Jesus-y
one's going out there.
There. He's told me that he's never encountered so much religious.
I mean, it's possible that
so much
someone
religious,
somewhere is doing
mentalities
it.
As he has
some crazy
when he's dealing
bum.
With homeless people, taking them to homeless shelters and shit.
Not
like
a way
that.
To live. No one wants to live like that.
He says it looks really sad, actually, because these people, like homeless bums and lunatics, end up getting really profited out. You know, they really start to get delusions of grandeur.
Do they have a lot of Jesuses there?
There's a lot of very
Jesus-y?
Religious and Jesus-y freaks over there.
No, people who think
encounter so much religious lathering and so much religious mentality as he has when he's dealing with homeless people, taking them to homeless shelters and shit like that.
Yeah, anybody who works in the psychiatric field.
He says it looks really sad, actually, because these people, like homeless ones in the lunatics, end up getting really profited out. You know, they really start to get released.
Can imagine back then, health care being what it was, I'm sure the mental health wasn't so great.
Well, you might as well be a. I mean, you might as well be a bum today. I mean, well, back then, you know, you might as well be a bum. I mean,
well, if you're going to be a bum back then, probably the best way to get any money is to be a prophet, and I suppose because, mm-hmm. I mean, we have a lot of people mm-hmm. thinking that crazy people have some sort of direct line to a god, why would it be any stranger for a desert religion
so
to think that
Jesus
as, like,
Jesus
you know, Southeast Asia or whatever when they talk about shamans? As I mean, if you watch The Life of Brian, it's not history, but according from what I hear, it's pretty accurate. There's a lot of crazy people along the street being prophets, and it says so right in the Bible.
Well, there was plenty of Jesuses.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. All these different prophets with their, you know, philosophizing on the street.
Jesus, I know.
It is?
But I think you can also say Jesuses, but I know it's Jesus is the most correct.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls. Take a deep breath. Relax.
Jesus was way cool. Everybody liked Jesus. Everybody wanted to hang out with him. Anything he wanted to do, he did. He turned water into wine. And if he wanted to, he could have turned wheat into marijuana or sugar into cocaine. Or vitamin pills into amphetamines. He walked on the water and swam on the land. He would tell these stories and people would listen. He was really cool. If you were blind or lame, you just went to Jesus and he would put his hands on you and you would be healed. That's so cool. He could have played guitar better than Hendrix. He could have told the future. He could have baked the most delicious cake in the world. He could have scored more goals than Wayne Gretzky. He could have danced better than Baryshnikov. Jesus could have been funnier than any comedian you can think of. Jesus was way cool. He told people to eat his body and drink his blood. That's so cool. Jesus was so cool. But then some people got jealous of how cool he was, so they killed him. But then he rose from the dead. He rose from the dead, danced around, and went up to heaven. I mean, that's so cool. Jesus was way cool. No wonder there are so many Christians.
Okay, intermission's over. The show must go on.
Attention all atheists. The Short Handbook of Atheist Apologetics is your ultimate source of philosophical ammunition. With refutations of 30 religious arguments, a discussion of the problem of evil, and strong atheistic arguments, all in a practical 52-page handbook. Learn the 3 silver bullet fallacies that disprove most religious arguments. How Pascal's wager is really an atheistic argument, and why gods cannot exist. The Short Handbook of Atheist Apologetics can be bought for only $8. For a table of contents and much more details, see objectivethought.com/books. That's www.objectivethought.com/books.
Oh, boy.
Well, see, I love that song.
Yeah, me
because,
too.
Because, I mean, it kind of shows us that...
Jesus was way cool.
Well, it shows us that what people think about Jesus is simply not in Scripture. It's just made up. Jesus could tell the funniest joke in the world. Well, if Jesus is God, I mean, why can't Jesus, grow the best weed? He could turn grass into marijuana, you know? Of course he could.
I don't want to talk about marijuana.
No, we're not. But but Jesus could, make the most
because,
baskets.
And Andrew's here, and if we start talking about that,
but
he's never going to stop.
Theologians say it all the time. I think the last thing I heard about Jesus was that he was a great conversationalist, and he had a great sense of humor. It's like, how do they know that? From the parables? Come on, like you just said, reading the parables is almost as boring as reading the Begats.
Oh, the Begats. Jesus Christ.
I mean, we just don't know anything. If Jesus had existed, we don't know anything about who he was, what he said, or what he did. When people say, he could have existed, but he was a great man, it's like, how do you know that? How do you know he wasn't an evil man? What do you know about Jesus, and where does that information come from? Obviously,
all right.
It comes from the Bible. So here we are.
And we are going to look at the Bible. We're going to look at the Book of Jesus from bookofjesus.com. Because I didn't want to go through the 4 Gospels and go through them and find the stuff. So I decided to use the Book of Jesus. Like I said, it's fucking boring. And I can't believe how boring it is. Even
and we can't
even
keep
to go,
straight which gospel is better than the other. How would we know?
Even to go through this very compressed stuff is so boring. I mean, who really think this shit is great? I mean, have they ever read Shakespeare or Plato?
I know,
or?
Janine Garofalo will sit there and say, the Bible is a beautiful work of fiction. It's like, how the fuck do you know? Have you read that shit? No. She just wanted to sound like she's being respectful of the Bible and not believe it.
No, I'm not just saying that it's immoral, which it is. It's just badly written.
Yeah.
It's boring.
It's not a beautiful work of fiction. It's a badly written book of fiction.
Anyway, the first thing I by the way, you guys, you shouldn't type. If you want to say something, go ahead and say it.
I'm not typing.
They were doing a little typing on Skype there. You little rascals.
Well, I just wanted to mention, if I could, quickly about boring is leading to like an apathetic view towards religion or whatever. You know, just like in public schools, you you spend so much time just being bored that you just become apathetic about
yeah.
it. Yeah. Like, oh, screw it.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of Christians, maybe some Christians start reading the Bible and get so bored they just give up.
Well, the emphasis
definitely.
Isn't on learning what it says. The emphasis is on just believing. It doesn't say anything about really studying it. You're a better person for just believing it.
Now, the
right,
first...
But you're supposed to feel like you're learning something.
Yeah, I know.
So they have to put some information in there.
Okay, well, I don't know. If you look at the Bible, it's pretty shitty. There's really nothing to learn there.
Confusing parables that they don't want you to understand. They just want you to hear repeated from a preacher and
yeah.
get motivated, feel some kind of sense of awe for something that just appears to be so much grander than your own mental capabilities of comprehension because of the fact that it's written so incoherently.
Well, if it was such a great book, they wouldn't have to bind it in leather. Or illuminate it, you know?
Have you opened a bad book? You're going to get bound in the leather right now.
No, I don't mean that. it might as well be a paperback Precious Moments book as a big family Bible with the illuminated letters, because it's of more value as a bound Bible, isn't it? Like, with the illuminated letters, because it's pretty and it has some art in it.
I especially like when they give Bibles the gold trim, too, on the end of
mm-hmm.
pages and stuff.
So.
Anyway, yeah. The first event is in chapter 2, the temptation in the wilderness, where after Jesus is baptized, he goes out in the desert for 40 days to 49, eating nothing.
40 days and 40 nights. Where have I heard that before?
Oh, it's symbolic. It means a really long time. Because the Jews could not count more than 40.
Why, because they had 8 fingers on each
yeah.
hand and toe? Like, what am I talking about? I guess they'd have an extra arm for that.
Yeah. They had 3 arms and they couldn't count more than 40. So,
okay.
Satan says, if you're the Son of God, command that these stones be turned to loaves of bread. And then Jesus said, Scripture says... Well, if Jesus talks, it should be Aaron who says it. But anyway, since I'm the one who has it right in front of me.
It's your time to shine. Huh?
Jesus said... Well, I can't do it.
In an English accent, of course.
I can't do it. But he says, man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. What the fuck is that? Can I eat the words of God? What the fuck?
Obviously, man cannot live on thoughts and ideas. That's ridiculous.
What does that mean? It's completely stupid.
Maybe if you
have
enough faith.
He lives on the word that proceeds from the mouth of God? A mouth? Where is this mouth?
And then, of course, after that, Satan, and this is the passage they always use to say that you shouldn't test God, because Satan says, if you're the Son of God, throw yourself down from here, because he's on a parapet. For Scripture says, he'll give you angels charge concerning you, and on their hands they'll bear you up, lest you dash your foot against a stone. And then Jesus says, it has also been said in the Scriptures, you must not put the Lord your God to the test.
Wow, Satan pointed out a biblical inconsistency.
So basically, the Bible says that he'll be protected, and Jesus...
says he won't.
Won't do it anyway, because you can't test God. So that means that...
That means that Jesus really sucked at debate and didn't have any good arguments.
Even when the Bible says something will happen, you shouldn't expect it, because you can't put God to the test.
Well, because of the book of Job or whatever. God doesn't want people to expect what he's going to do.
What do you have to say about that?
What do we have to say about that? I think that was a lame response. The Satan put out a very good challenge, and Jesus as well. It was like one of those psychics that says, I can't test my psychic powers because there's too many skeptics here.
Right. It's extremely idiotic.
It's very, very lame.
Now, if you look at the wedding at Cana in Galilee, if our guests are going through the chapter there. This is the part, it's not really interesting, but it's just interesting that this is the part where Jesus says, "Women, women, why are you turning to me?" You know, that part where he talks to his mother, he says, "Women,
woman,
woman."
I know, he talks to her in a very disrespectful manner, because when you look at a woman and call her woman, we don't really like that much.
It says, when
especially your own mother, who you're supposed to honor according to the Ten Commandments that Jesus said that he never broke.
Exactly, so he broke. And then later on he also breaks another of the Ten Commandments, the one about the Sabbath.
Yeah, that's the famous one, but nobody wants to mention this one because children are supposed to be beaten for disrespecting their parents. See, the Bible doesn't tell us how to treat children except to beat them. And it tells us, though, specifically to honor your parents. I don't know how this is honoring. This is anything but dishonoring. Because Jesus says, of course, you're supposed to leave your family.
Exactly.
Jesus didn't exactly leave Mary yet. Or maybe
he said
Jesus
he would turn. Jesus also said he would turn mothers and daughters against each other, and fathers and sons and brothers against each other.
I know. Maybe he should be more specific. Turning mothers and sons against each other, and daughters and fathers. Just go through the list of family members.
He does get specific though, doesn't he?
Uh-huh. All right. Let me see.
I don't know why he complained though, because later on he poured some water onto some wine dregs and made some watery wine. And
okay, in chapter 3 you have the money changers at the temple.
Yeah, everyone thinks Jesus kicks ass now.
Well, this is interesting because the story happens twice. In 3 of the 4 Gospels it happens near the beginning, and in the last one, in another Gospel, it happens near the end. So when did this happen? Fuck if I know.
So it didn't really happen twice,
it happened at different times.
Okay.
So I guess it's another one of those things that have to be resolved.
That we're not supposed to think about or question.
Well, yeah, the money changes at the temple. He goes to a temple seeing merchants selling cattle, sheep, and pigeons, and money changers sitting at their table. So he makes himself a whip there, and he drives them out of the temple. He overturns people's tables, and he just goes apeshit. So,
because he's a real man, not a sissy. We have to know that. Because he doesn't like people selling out the church.
He says, "Get these things out of here! Don't turn my father's house into a store." So what does that mean? What is the great morality in this again? To use violence. For what? Because there were money changers. It's great.
Well, he could have asked them to leave and explained why you shouldn't have a marketplace inside a temple. Is there a reason Jesus had to kick people's asses and stuff and use a whip? Or was he just in a bad mood that day? I mean, it sounds as if Jesus was overpowered by people, so
it's crazy.
He had to use violence. Why exactly did he have to do that? I don't get it. I mean, is this a problem with the whole love your enemy shit and stuff? Love thy neighbor, love thy enemy as yourself, or whatever. I don't know. Generally, they talk about if they slap you on the cheek, you're supposed to turn it and accept another slap.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess since Jesus is God, he gets to judge everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And he just felt as if he had to hurt people with a bullwhip or whatever in order to fix it. I don't know.
So, and in chapter 4, you've got what I was talking about. The Sabbath was made for man, which is this whole thing about it's supposed to be forbidden to do things on the Sabbath, but in many places, in fact, he explains why it's good to do things on the Sabbath. And so this old Ten Commandments thing again. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So there you go.
And of course, he does specifically say, I have never broken any of the commandments. And that's the only commandment that survives in the earlier commandments, as opposed to the Protestant Catholic commandments we know today.
And the other thing is, it's not even only in this one place. He really explicitly says that the Sabbath can be broken in many places in the Gospels, not just this one place.
However, what is the penalty for breaking the Sabbath?
Death.
It's death.
And in the Bible, the Pharisees do try to do get the idea of killing Jesus many times too.
Gee, maybe that's something the Christians could say. Well, look, he's trying to get them to kill him because of the
there
prophecy.
You go. There you go.
By breaking the commandment.
And then we arrive at the Sermon on the Mount.
Oh yes, the one that people hold up as like
yes.
the greatest.
Yes. This great moral teaching. How does it start? Happy are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Happy are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Happy are you that are hungry now, for you will be filled. The
so
lesson here is
promise.
If you're miserable, be happy with what you have, because you'll get what you deserve in heaven.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's basically how you get.
Now that's human progress for you.
That's how you get.
That's helping the poor people.
Because when you die, we'll give you a whole bunch of stuff.
Wow.
It also has like a call to martyrdom. Though, this happy are they who are persecuted for righteousness' sake.
Exactly.
Well, even Amway promises you'll get money before you die.
It's the same thing that they told the black slaves.
Mm-hmm.
Stop your fucking complaining. Be a good slave. Be miserable. Be hungry. You'll get what you deserve when you go to heaven. Until then, be a good slave.
Well, that's
do whatever you're told. That's what it is. This is moral. This apparently is the great moral discourse.
Well, of course, this is also the answer to why didn't Jesus ever preach against slavery? Which is a big charge against Jesus. He had every opportunity to say it's wrong to own another human being. Well, we have our answer. It's basically slavery is part of Christianity. And you will hear many Christians saying right out that the greatest freedom for any human being is to be a slave to Christ.
Hmm.
And that phrase is said in many different ways by many Christians. They, you know, call themselves slaves to Christ. They even have screen names called Slave to Christ, which is kind of a normal thing in religion. I think Muslim means slave to Allah, but...
Okay, later on it says, well, not that later on, it's still pretty near the top. It says, you have heard it was said by the ancients, you are not allowed to murder, and anyone who does commit murder must answer for it before the court. But I say to you that anyone who is angry with his brother without a cause will answer for it before the court. Anyone who shall say to his brother, fool, which, by the way, Jesus did, will have to answer for it before
the
council.
All the time.
But anyone who says, you impious fool, will be in danger of the fires of Gehenna, hell. So, so not only is Jesus saying you're not allowed to murder, but you're not allowed to think.
Mm-hmm.
To be angry.
You're
not allowed to say that someone is a fool. Wow, that's great morality.
And nobody's allowed to be angry but him, because remember the whole thing in the temple with the money changers. I think Jesus was angry. But that's when,
yeah, exactly.
When you have
there
a religion that has a different moral standard for its leader than for the rest of us.
You have heard that it was said by ancients, you are not allowed to commit adultery. But I say to you that anyone who looks at a woman with the intent of having sex with her has already committed adultery with her. in his heart.
So if you've ever lusted after a woman, that means that you're an adulterous pervert.
If your right eye should cause you to sin, poke it out and throw it away from you. For it is more profitable that one of your body members be destroyed than to have your whole body thrown into Gehenna.
Mm-hmm. Hell.
So, is this what a moral person says, or is this an insane, frustrated cult member talking here?
Right. I mean, people like to reinterpret that passage, but he's trying to get it across that you should rather do anything, even something outrageous like plucking out your own eye, before you'd want to go to hell. It's, you know, they always say, no, he's talking about, like, removing parts of you that are bad, like sin.
It doesn't matter.
He wants us to know how terrible.
No, it says if your right eye should cause you to sin. He's talking about
right
parts of you that cause you to sin.
Right, he's really, to me, it sounds like he's really talking about doing outrageous things, like removing body parts. I mean.
Oh, shit, we only have 2 minutes left.
Yeah.
There's just so much to parables. I mean, listen, in the parables, Jesus says explicitly, I don't know if I can find it, Jesus says explicitly that he speaks in parables so that people won't understand him and go to hell.
Heaven.
No, hell.
Yeah, yeah.
Hell.
He wants,
so people won't
he wants fewer people to go to hell.
He wants fewer people to go to heaven.
He says so, that he says clearly that he wants people to not understand him and
clearly
go to hell.
Clearly, he doesn't want his message to go out around the world. Although Christians claim that that's what they should be doing, is spreading the message to save people and all of mankind. But Jesus doesn't want that.
Let me try to find it. Oh, yes, that's right. It's in Mark chapter 4, 1-20. He says, it is given to you, he's talking to the apostles, he says, it is given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given. To those on the outside, all things are shown in parable, that seeing they may see and not perceive in hearing, they may hear and not understand, lest at any time they might be converted and their sins should be forgiven them.
Now, don't you understand that's Jesus' famous sense of humor?
Talking. Yeah.
He's being sarcastic, don't you get it?
So anyway, oh shit, there's no more time. But my conclusion is that there's nothing that could possibly be considered moral in the Gospels, and that Jesus is an apocalyptic, delusional, frustrated cult leader with delusions of grandeur.
Yeah.
We have
like
5 seconds.
On Skid Row.
What?
Jesus is just like the people on Skid Row.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's the end of the show.
Too bad.
I barely had time to scratch the surface. But maybe it's for the best, because it's so boring.
Gotta look under that beard.
Well, we covered a bunch of cool things. The sermon, and the parables, and other stuff.
Yeah.
So, next, tomorrow...
Court.
Oh, yeah. Visit us at hellboundalley.com. And if you have answers for us, email them to me at ally@hellboundalley.com. Tell me why you know Jesus was good and righteous.
And you want to say?
And tomorrow, we will have a live show. Who knows what we'll talk about. Just remember, tomorrow's daylight is the beginning of daylight savings time, so we're losing an hour. So we will be there at 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time at freethoughtradio.com.
And
go to hellboundalley.com/live.
And next week, it's a talk with David Mills Part 3 with Aaron and David Mills.
Excellent.
Should be cool.
Yeah.
Bye, everyone.
See you next week.